Welcome to the next installment of Battle Babes Grey Death Legion Trilogy Book Talk.
Yep. We're talking about chapters 9 through 16, trying to figure out who's who and what's what, and watch things explode.
And watch things explode. Yes, lots of that does happen in the first, in these chapters. So I hope you guys enjoy, and let us know what you guys think in the comments below.
And again, we are by no means experts in any of the topics we talk about.
Yeah.
So we are going to have things, we're going to have wrong information.
Yeah. Let us know. Educate us. That's okay. Please just do it in a nice and respectful manner. Let's delve into these chapters. Chapter 9.
So the guys are still together, Gray and Tor. They're discussing what they should do. They have both have opinions on how they should proceed. Tor wants to go and get a job, get some money so that they can maybe purchase a way off the planet. Unfortunately, Gray has got a pretty one-track mind about revenge. You know, you watch your dad get killed and he wants to find the Marauder pilot and just kill him again.
Kill him again. Yeah, absolutely. And like, they do run into the Marauder right in this chapter. Again, the Marauder and the other mechs are starting to tear up the city, do that first strike on the city, and they decide that, well, Gray says that, hey, I have these people. I don't really want to take you there just because it's dangerous for them, but we really have nowhere else to go right now. And, well, on the way there, everything just goes
sideways. They round the corner, and the house that they're trying to get to is destroyed.
Well,
like,
yeah.
In front of their face, like, just completely demolished.
Well, yeah, that's at the beginning of chapter 10, which is, like, it literally goes from them talking, oh, we need to go find somewhere and get safe, and then all of a sudden, they're beginning of chapter 10, and they're slowly trying to get there, trying to get by all of these death machines, as Gray describes them, and they see the pirates taking people for hostages, and all of a sudden there's a loud crash, and oh wait,
no more house.
They see the Marauder smash the house of the merchant that
helped Gray in the first place.
Yeah, where he was at the beginning of, well, after the battle, right? Like, as soon as the story, well, it's not as soon as the story starts, but as soon as they had that first, well, when the planet was taken over by the pirates, right?
Yes.
And so he's completely astounded. We still don't know what's happened to Birner and his family. We just know that there's no more house.
So I'm kind of hoping that they, and this is really bad because I suppose it's the lesser of two evils, but I kind of hope they were taken prisoner and not died in the house.
Well, no, I kind of hope they're safe somewhere else and not prisoner, but it's okay. Yeah. Six of one, half dozen of another. Like, yeah. We just don't want them dead.
We just don't want them dead because we'll help them out. They're good characters.
Yeah, like, it's good side characters, maybe someone that he can rely on later on.
Yeah. Grayson, besides revenge, is trying to go find Mara at the palace. It's his second track mind, which I don't fault him for it because her family is powerful to a point. Like, they might have resources that they can't get with basic money that they would make down, like, in the shipyard or wherever.
Or with him being an off-worlder, right? Like, that already is huge, the fact that he's an off-worlder.
Yeah.
And they were essentially leaving them to Hendrix Pirates to be like, hey, bye-bye, we're going back to our own world and we're going to leave you to deal with these people. But I found it interesting that Tor decides, okay, I'm going to go to the spaceport.
Mm-hmm.
And Gray's like, yeah, no, I can't. I can't get past this whole, the Marauder killed my daddy. And so I need to revenge him, which I get it. So they go their separate ways, planning to get back together.
Yeah. They'll meet up once they've figured out whatever. Yeah, down. Once Gray gets his head on straight, kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, which happens quite quick, but we'll delve into that in a minute. But then Sing. Like, I knew Sing, well, we know he's a dick just because of what he does. But this is the first real thing we see is that he just talks about how there's Carlisle gone, Grayson's gone, and he knows that he shot him. He should be dead, but he's not with a pile of bodies. So he's like, well, I hope he dies. He either goes out into the fields and dies because it's going to become night soon and freeze or he's in the city and we'll get him sooner or later. We'll
find him and get him, yeah. But yeah, this guy's just not, I mean, he's not nice to begin with.
Yeah, I'm really, and it's not just a captain, he's Captain Lord. So he's definitely has some power somewhere. But then we also find out who he's really working for. Like, he doesn't say anything about Hendrik. He just says he's working for Duke Reichel, who is, we find out, actually, they look at him, or his official title is the Red Hunter in the successor states, which that kind of makes me worried. If he's working with this guy, who it makes me think of the Marvel, the guy who's in charge of the... The bad, not S.H.I.E.L.D. Don't look at
Hydra?
Hydra! Yeah, the guy with like the red the skull red... facey thingy? That's what the it makes
red...
me think.
Red skull?
The red skull.
Your husband's busy.
Yeah, good thing my husband's busy. So yeah, like I'm like, oh my god. So there are these two names, and Sing is not too worried, which I was kind of shocked. I thought he'd be a little bit more worried, but he's like, ah, it's not going to make that big of a deal. It's not whatever kind of thing.
Well, and I think his reasoning is like, either the off-worlders, the ones that have escaped, obviously are not coming back. Like, the ones that are able to leave the planet are gone. And they've killed or imprisoned pretty much all the other ones. So having this one random kid in his eyes.
Well, yeah, I'm literally a kid.
Who's hasn't finished his training, running around out there when they're looking for off-worlders and killing willy-nilly, randomly, like not really caring who gets in the way. Yeah, why would he be worried about this punk?
Yeah, he's like, okay, like, well, whatever. We'll worry about it, but it's not a big deal. But it's, so looking at Sing, like, yeah, this was our first real, like, we heard about him earlier, but this is like, okay, he's a big important guy, but I guess we'll see more about him, like we'd learn more about him later in the chapters. But then Gray, like, we see that he actually heads out to Thunder Rift, which I thought was kind of cool. I thought it would just be this place that maybe he was hiding out in, or just a place he randomly found, but he likes Thunder Rift. He would go there as a refuge.
Yeah, to get away from either, you know, his, you know, captain, like, hard, rigorous training. Of course, you know, 20-year-old kid who wants to learn how to do this, you know, army warrior stuff. It's like his Zen palace. Like Superman's, yeah, I'm not a big fan of DC, so I really can't think of what it's actually called, but, you know.
His, like, special.
Yeah. You get away to listen to the sounds of nature and just to relax. Clear your head.
Well, and one of the things that I found really funny about this was he is so excited about this place. He loves it. Like, they do a really good job describing it. And one of the things that Gray talks about is the fact that he took Mara out there thinking that this is going to be, oh, the perfect place. And we're going to have a little bit of special time.
A little bit of romantic. And she's not impressed.
Yeah, she doesn't like that it's noisy and it's wet and it's blah, blah, blah. And he doesn't take her back, and actually doesn't go back for days after the first time he took her there, but he did continue going back. And I think it's kind of cool that it's has such a significance for Grayson, considering, well, it's the name of the dang book. But it's a pretty cool location. And the fact that it appears overnight, yes, air quotes of overnight, because of the weather change, right? Because their weather, they have nice-ish weather for a certain length of time, and then it freezes, and then within however many of their days, or however many standard days it is, it melts again, right? It just goes so, it's so drastic of a change that it's frozen, then it's not frozen.
Yeah.
And there's just rushing water.
Water.
And another thing they talk about is the fact that there's boulders, 1,000-pound, or I don't even know how many tons of boulders just, like, fall down. I'm like, oh yeah, that feels like it's a safe place to be. Great, yes, that's where I want to be. But
he's been out there probably enough times that he's figured out where some of the safer zones are to, you know, be able to hang out. And like, I think he even mentions he swims. Like, there's pools up there, too. Although, it's probably freaking cold.
Well, but, yeah, the glacier water. And it, like, he borrows a Sargad Militia hovercraft skimmer thing to get out to Thunder Rift. And he's, as they're traveling, it gives us a little bit of a clear idea of the planet and the fact that we learn that they can't eat the vegetation that's grown on planet. They actually have domes that all of their vegetation is brought into, and they grow there so that they can...
Yeah, so they, like, import the stuff they can grow and eat, and then, yeah, the domes are the safe food. But it's like, what do the natives eat? I'm pretty sure they would have an immunity to whatever the reason why the off-worlders can't eat
planets. But they were still originally humans that came to the planet, and so I don't... And again, we don't know how long they've been out there, and there still could just be chemicals and stuff in the ground, like in the plants or whatever, that there's no way you can have it. I think they say they use them as spices, the certain plants, but that's it, because if you have too much of it, it's like... different types of seasonings or different types of things that we use in different cooking and other things that could, if you have too much of a dose here on Earth, could hurt
you. Or, you know, certain parts of the plant are poisonous versus, you know, you can eat the flower but not the stem sort of thing, right? So it's probably something similar. It's like they can take the, you know, petals, grind it up and use it as, you know, a spice, but the stem or the leaves are an absolute no-go.
Yeah, so it's like we just, it kind of just opens it up to like help us understand what the planet's like, and the fact that, because we've heard that the city's like starting to deteriorate and everything, and so this kind of explains. And one of the listeners also commented on one of the last videos that it's, they're so far away and they've been on the outskirts of society and the main track for so many hundreds of years that everything's just kind of starting to deteriorate, and so this is one of these things they've had to be able to start growing their own
to survive, because it's either that or move closer to some of the other hubs.
I don't know how that would work, but it's,
well, and I also, where's what's close? In all relative, we're not entirely sure how much distance is between Sargad and the next closest city.
Well, yeah, we don't really talk about. There's not many. We know Thunder Rift is a couple hundred kilometers or whatever away, and so that's, it's not like it. They're pretty close. So, I like the descriptions. Just the fact, like, they talk about how the one thing that Grayson says is you can hear the water from 10 kilometers away. That's how noisy it is. And he said he used to take ear covers, but now he just uses this waxy yellow substance and uses that to plug his ears.
Whatever works, I suppose.
And if it makes it so it's relaxing,
yeah,
why not? But he uses this as a place to kind of start scoping out the palace, and not the palace, the castle.
The castle.
Because the palace isn't the castle, and the castle is the palace. So, the castle, really, which is their base.
Really confusing, yeah. So, all the mechs and everything that the militia have taken over is the castle. But where the royal family is the palace.
Yes. It's okay. So, the castle. So, watching the castle and watching the airfield, this is where he really starts thinking about Tor's story. And he's trying to figure it out. And the whole fact that where they found Tor, it's kind of like if you were flying to Calgary from somewhere, there's all of these different locations you could get to, come through to get here. But really, there's one ultimate location if you're flying into Calgary, right? It's the International Airport.
Right.
But there... you can go anywhere, and it's the likelihood of it have being an accident to a found Tor and his ship. I don't think Tor's lying. I actually think he was ambushed, but the fact that these aren't, like, this Singh is not technically connected to Hendrik, right?
Right.
And Gray is trying to figure out, okay, well, there was like 30 different options. So someone had to have given...
Essentially, someone leaked the flight path and where he was going to be stopping to recharge his ship to do the next jump. And that's when the guys hijacked him.
Right.
Essentially. Like, so yeah, absolutely. I believe Tor, like, from his point of view, his story is true. Like, he doesn't know what's going on behind the scenes.
Well, yeah, and it's, my big question is, after reading that part, is who is behind this? Because Gray says it's not essentially a mutiny against Oberon, which is Hendrick, right?
Yeah.
So the chapter ends with Gray remembering seeing space and saying to himself, I've seen this face before. I don't know where I've seen it, if it's through... like the training as he's grown up, because if you're a mech warrior, you get to know other mech warriors through different things and through their computer systems. And so his goal is to get to some kind of a computer system in the castle, which I still don't know how he planned to do that, but he clearly remembers his face and it being dark, lean, the mustache and beard, but that the eyes were so bright, they were the eyes of a fanatic. So that also makes me think, okay, this is definitely not connected to Hendrick, but it leaves it off with Gray being like, okay, I need to go back because I'm not going to get anything done here. I'm either going to freeze to death or something. So I have to go back and figure out what's going on.
Yeah, so I think at that point, he kind of realizes that Tor's line of thought of getting a job and getting some sort of money is actually a good idea.
Well, yeah.
Because it's still going to help him reach the goal of revenge.
Well, and that's what he does, right?
Like essentially, which like
in chapter 11.
Leads into chapter 11. It's him ditching the little feeder thing at the edge of the city and he decides to take the tools that are on it.
He's a tool taking tools.
But he looks at them, they're not marked. So it doesn't say property of on them. Or,
yeah.
So he figures he could fence them or pawn them or just outright sell them to somebody.
Which, that's not a bad thought process.
Well, it's not. Because at this point in time, what he wants is food for his belly and a good night's sleep.
And proper clothes because he's currently covered in mud.
He is absolutely covered in mud. There's a really good, and I wrote it down, how he looks. Of course, now I can't find it. Mud smeared and scarecrow appearance.
Oh yeah, he's really gonna not stand out.
Yeah, and on top of that, he doesn't look like one of the natives.
Well, yeah, like he
looks like an off-worlder. So on top of that, he stands out double.
Mm-hmm.
But because they describe him as a scarecrow, like, I can't picture him going through all this rigorous training for the military and learning how to be a mech warrior, that he doesn't build up some sort of muscle. So he's been without food. Like, there really isn't a passage of time?
Yeah, like, well, with the way, and I still have my head around Trell's timeline, so it's got to have been a couple days, but the thing is, I think Connor. Like, I love Connor, don't get me wrong. Connor is a tall,
lean
fella, right? Like,
right.
I'm pretty sure he has some muscle on him, but I'm like, I'm not picturing, like, the muscle builders we were talking about in the last ones.
He's more like Sam, not a Dean.
Yeah. Yeah, he's definitely more tall and lean and... Yeah, but Dean is still kind of lean. Okay, I digress. Sorry. So anyways, he comes back to town with these weapons. Or not weapons, these tools. And, well, it doesn't exactly go the way he plans.
Well, no, for one, he doesn't know the layout of the city. He knows a general direction of where he should be going.
Probably how to get to Mars.
But because he's... And... Even then, to get to Mara's and back is from the castle.
Yeah.
Now he's on the outskirts of town that he's never been to before.
And I bet there's probably going to be streets and stuff that are not passable because the mechs have come in and been like, hey, blah, blah, blah.
It's like, so he gets lost and gets himself turned around a couple times and then finds himself at the palace.
Facing...
Well, even before that, he's at the palace looking at it going, well, I'm here. Why don't I go see if I can find Mara? And then he's looking at the fence that circles the palace going, yeah, I'm not going to make this.
I have no idea how I'm going to climb that. I can run max, but I can't climb.
Yeah, well, I'm picturing it's probably like 10 feet tall because it's meant as a security fence.
Well, yeah.
Out. And I'm picturing it's got something similar to barbed wire on the top, again, to keep people out.
And there were soldiers, right? I don't know how, like, there were still soldiers when this all happens, but they were more probably worried about the actual palace inhabitant and trying to defend it. Well, so then, yeah, he's definitely not going to try and jump the wall when...
No. So level-headed reasoning, he figures out that, yeah... He can wait. He can try and get into the palace to see Mara at another time. He needs to go sell these tools and figure stuff out. And at that point in time, he gets face to face with... It was a wasp. Wasp comes around the corner. And then the other end of the street, city watch, palace guards, whoever the militia from the town, city, yep, come around in one of their little GEVs.
Yeah.
And that's...
I find it hilarious because he's not so excited, but he's like, okay, I have these tools. I'm going to go sell them.
Well, he doesn't
have the tools. Well, no, he still has the tools.
They're just squished.
They're squished because the mech walked on it, didn't they?
They do. Like, he ends up being thrown to the ground, jumping out of the way of the foot, probably, of the mech as it walks past him. And he knows from training that if he just stays still lying on the ground, a prone heat source, the pilot won't think anything of it. It's the moving heat sources outside the cockpit that they're going to be concerned about and probably shoot at.
Yeah.
So he's just going to lay down and just hope he doesn't get stepped on. while this confrontation happens, while it shoots at the palace, blows up the fence.
Yeah.
And then these other guys come around the corner and start shooting at it, and it jumps in the air, turns around, and blasts a, well, great big mech versus a little tiny tank, and it explodes and covers him in shrapnel and heat and who knows what else. And
well,
he's just this little human.
But that's where the battle really starts for us, right? Chapter 12 is where the wasp does this. I'm knocking everything today. Holy moly. The wasp starts just like destroying stuff, and it destroys this GEV, and Gray nearly avoids getting killed himself. But then his military training kicks in, right? And this is where I talking about like listening to my dad's stories or like other family members or friends of us of growing up, like just kind of the training and things like that. And he remembers that the whole point is when something like this is happening, someone's got to take charge. And there's all these soldiers who literally have not been in any real live action battles. Not like he has, but he's actually had more actual training. These are just militia. They're supposed to be the last resort if the Carlisle Commandos aren't around.
And they're foot soldiers.
Mm.
Which, up until recent events, the mechs have been on their side. They haven't had to deal with the conflict of facing a mech and trying to fight it. Like, and they don't have that training.
Well,
like you're saying, like Gray isn't battle-hardened. He hasn't been in through an actual fight. But I guarantee they have...
He's done simulators.
He's done simulators, or even, like, they load... I'm pretty sure they can load blanks into the mechs, and he's still... You know, it's not live fire training,
mm-hmm,
but it's still training, like, in the pilot seat of these mechs.
Well, and he's grown up with it, and the one quote which really stood out for me, and it's the big point of why Gray decides, hey, I need to do something, is... His tutor, right, or his main commander, Kai Griffith, taught him that there is only one way to overcome panic. And the only... The only way to beat panic is to do something. I don't care if what you do is dead wrong. Taking action is better than just sitting there getting killed, which is absolutely correct, right? That's soldiers are trained to do what they need to protect themselves, to protect the other people, and then ask questions later. And that's literally what he does. He's like, okay, I see all these people. He jumps up on the other GEV and gets a hold of the machine gun and starts firing at the wasp, which I like they even say 1,500 rounds a minute. And he just starts firing at the wasp. And of course, all these militia really don't know in the panic who he is, but he's taking charge. He starts firing at the wasp.
Well, he barks. I think he's starting to bark orders too.
Not quite yet, because he actually starts to hit the wasp, and the wasp starts looking for its lasers, because his medium lasers are in his hands, and he dropped them. And so Gray gets a little bit of a heads up on it, and the wasp tries to hit him with his hand. But he gets the machine moving, and then he starts calling to the soldiers. And he's like, hey, guys, you guys need to do this. I need you to help me. And he tells them, aim at the head. That's what we need to do. Right now, we have to, in these kinds of situations, you want to take prisoners. But right now, it's a freaking tank up against infantrymen. You're going to take the dang tank out.
Yeah.
Right? So take out the head. And that's what they start doing.
Yeah, hit the weak spot. And he knows that hitting the head, there's the sensors. So if you take out the sensors, you can't see.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no actual...
there's no visor.
There's no windshield.
Yeah.
So a lot of the mechs look like they have visor windshields, like greens. But it's not. It's completely enclosed. They're relying on infrared sensors, essentially, to find their heat sources to shoot at things.
Well, I like that they literally catch the wasp off guard with a grenade and it falls, which that's the best way to take out a mech is to get it to fall, because then they have to try and get up, and they have to use a human trying to get up without their hands. That's hard enough, but a big ass 20-ton machine trying to get up and it's already damaged a bit. Well, he falls down and he ain't getting back up, because Gray finishes him with the gun. Like, takes out the head.
Yeah. Well, I think that's when the other one shows up.
No. Well, kind of. Like, they go back
to the palace.
Yeah, they go to the front of the palace, and that's where the other wasp is.
Because that's actually part of a plan. There's a grand master plan that we just keep getting tidbits of.
Yeah, we don't know. We know it has to do with Raikel and Sing, but we don't know all about it. But it sounds like that was their plan, was that one of the wasps was going to go in the back door and the other wasp was going to go through the front gate, which that's where they find it and start pestering it. But then other militia show up and foot soldiers from the pirates, which kind of throws it off a bit.
A little bit, because I think now they're a little, not that they weren't outnumbered, you know, people versus mech, but now it's people versus mech.
Yeah, and it's already hard enough having some moving pieces, and now you add all these other moving pieces, and they're not all on your side, but at least Gray's still in the machine, or on the GEV, and he still has this machine gun.
Yeah, and the guys in the vehicle with him are listening to him.
Mm-hmm.
So when they say, you know, hey, go over here, and he starts aiming at the ankles because he notices one of the actuators in the ankles is actually crippled. So he's not so the mech's not moving as fast. So he actually switches from trying to hit the head again to hitting the legs, because he knows if he can take out the ankles, you take out anybody's ankles, they're going to fall down.
Well, exactly. And I thought it was hilarious, because I'm like, okay, like, you could shoot them, but that's a really small target. And then he uses the GEV
as a battering ram, which doesn't go quite to plan.
But it could have been freaking epic.
It would have been epic, but the mech did something unplanned, and he missed the target.
Which, okay, not a shocker, but it at least, I think that's kind of what was the final straw for this wasp. Because at the beginning of the next chapter, chapter 13, when there's some other militia vehicles show up, right, carrying PPCs, heavy, destructive PPCs, they have this mech that his right ankle is really, or right leg is really bad. And I think because that's the one that, that's the leg that Gray hit with the GED. So I think that it maybe wasn't exactly what he wanted to do, but it was enough to make enough damage that this mech is kind of like, oh, crud, because he rather quickly turns tail.
He starts to run, and that's the locust that they're fighting that turns and gets away.
No, it's not. It's the wasp, because the locust is the one that they corner. The wasp
and it surrenders.
The locust surrenders, yeah. Yeah, so the wasp gets away. They try and take it out, but the locust shows up, and that's how the wasp gets away. Because this locust shows up and distracts them, and they start trying to fire at the...
Well, now it's a brand... They're facing a brand new pristine mech.
Well, and it's... They talk about this locust being really fast. Like, 165 kilometers per hour this thing can move when it's in open field. And so...
That's frightening.
Yeah. I've never been in anything that you can control that can move that fast. I've been rides that move that fast, but not vehicles.
No. No, I don't want to be in a vehicle that moves that fast.
Well, I kind of do, but that's because I'm an adrenaline junkie. But but it's like we were talking in our like the first supplemental we did about how mechs, depending on their depending what they have, they can weigh the same but be totally different. So the wasps have more weapons and less armor and speed, and the locust, they literally say in the book that the locust decides to exchange its weapons so it can move faster and have better armor,
which is great because it's I think it's one of the ones labeled as a sniper. Actually, it can go in, take some pot shots at you, try, you know, damage your outer armor for the slower mechs to come in, and it's like taking a BB gun and like making dents in something, and it weakens the structure. And then you get your heavy hitters come in, and in one shot, they're internal and possibly killing the mech. And so that's exactly what the locust is. It's a pest.
Well, and it's still fast enough and has enough on armor to be able to get in and out real fast, and still have Trojan armor.
Yeah. Like, it can take a couple shots while it's, you know, shooting at you, trying to poke little pinholes in.
Mm-hmm. Be a pest while this other mech comes up in another direction, and...
Which was kind of what the plan was. It was the... So their first phase of this plan, which they've... It's a covert operation Code Dragon is what they've named it, for whatever reason.
Okay.
Yeah. So their first... The first skirmish, the first attack on the city, taking prisoners and basically putting the fear of mech into all of these people, was phase one. Phase two was this. These smaller mechs were going to the palace to be a distraction.
Well, and to break the holes into the walls, right? Like, take down the front gate, put a hole in the back. I don't know if that was actually planned, but ways to be able to...
To get in. Because actually, some of the prisoners that they took in the first wave... broke under interrogation and told them exactly where to find the royal family in their fortified bunkers in the palace. So they're going after the royal family.
Well, yeah, that you need, like, you need to get the government or the royal, like, whoever's in charge, right?
Yeah, the royal family and all the advisors who, yeah, absolutely go underground, go hiding. So yeah, these mechs are to punch holes, get into the grounds, and send all the foot soldiers scattering so that they can go in and find all the important people.
Well, and this, like, this locust, I kind of expected when it first showed up, I was like, okay, I'm not sure what's going to happen, but this guy, yeah, he doesn't have the massive weapons, because they talk about it has a machine gun, and it starts shooting at Gray's, the vehicle that Gray has, which has PPCs on it, which, the PPCs were I was trying. I was like, okay, well, I have to be able to explain what these things are, because this is literally what makes and breaks this whole Locust standoff, right? I wrote down the damn name of it because I was, and like what it meant. So I was like, it's Infernal Launcher. I thought I wrote it down. Hey, right here, right at the top. Okay, so, a PPC stands for Particle Projection Cannons. Now, the ones that Gray has on the PPC vehicle that he's driving in aren't as heavy as the ones like we use in our mechs when we're fighting that do 10 points of damage and put real big holes in the mechs.
Yeah, they're probably scaled. I mean, you wouldn't be able to put one of those heavy-duty ones that we have for mechs on this little tank.
But it's still going to be good enough. If you hit even a Locust or a Wasp, even maybe a Marauder, if you're close enough to one of those suckers and you shoot its leg, like, it's
going to stagger.
It's the, right? And if you have a bunch of them, so he's on this machine, and it's not like a gun that if it has bullets in it, it'll just shoot. It has to warm up, and so it gives the Locust a little bit of a chance to kind of be a jerk and shoot back and run and shoot lasers at it, but then they really get it going and the Locust gets into an alley. Well, there's not anywhere to go from it because it's a cul-de-sac.
Yeah.
And they get in there and Gray convinces one of the other soldiers who has just like a rifle or something to be like, okay, I need something better than just this PPC. I need something that's going to really hurt this. And he asks the guys that he's with, like, do you guys have something? And they say, oh yeah, we have a shoulder firing Inferno launcher, which I was like, okay, this thing sounds cool. So if you're not reading it, the description of this thing is it's a meter long tube. It has two rotating cylinders. And when it shoots two missiles within seconds of each other. And when it explodes, it doesn't just shoot like a bullet. I think Greek fire. And it shoots this like ooze. Like when it actually explodes, it turns into a gel that when it hits anything, it bonds. And it's a white phosphorus compound that when it's heated, it clings onto anything it hits, like Greek fire.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do. So he says, hey, you step out with your itty bitty rifle and just to distract him. And he steps out with this shoulder cannon. He's like, okay, you who is ever in that Locust, you can either keep fighting, because he's realizing at this point in time, this Locust is running, it's been shooting its medium lasers. Shooting its machine gun, so it's heating up.
Yeah.
And you can do what you want to do, and I'm going to shoot this sucker at you, which is going to heat you up even more, which you're either going to pass out from heat, or your machine's going to shut down, and we're just going to kill you. So you decide.
Yeah, you can either surrender and come out peacefully, or you're going to pass out and we'll forcefully remove you from the cockpit.
We'll just kill you because you get way too hot.
Being stuck in a cockpit with
an oven.
In an oven, yeah.
And I kind of actually expected this fight to go a little bit longer, but only because I was like, oh, and I wanted it to go a little bit longer. But chapter 16 really explains and it makes a lot of sense. But this is where we get introduced to a character, a female character. Someone was asking what we thought of them. So we'll talk about our female characters in a bit. But she's like, okay, the pilot says,
okay, I'll come out. Of course, what they hear is a mechanical voice through a loudspeaker.
Yep.
You can't tell if they're male or female.
No.
And honest to God, when the hatch popped and the pilot came out, I honestly thought it was going to be a guy.
Well,
because in my head, hate to say it, mech pilots are men.
Well, and I'd like, if anybody wants to throw this out here, what percentage of mech pilots over the time, or even at this era, were female? Really? Like, it's even in the military, even there is still now a drastically higher percentage of males for lots of different reasons. And so I was not expecting a female pilot. So she comes out and
she's all wearing, like, in my head, I pictured it. It's basically an outfit you would wear to yoga.
I wasn't even picturing that. I was thinking, like boy shorts and a loose tank top. Like, I'm not even...
Daisy Dukes in a sleeveless top.
Okay, maybe not Daisy Dukes. I don't know how comfortable those would be in.
But no, but the, like, yeah. Or, like, boxer shorts, even.
Well, yeah, something really loose, skimpy, because they say it gets so hot in those, even when you're not running, right? Like, you think, sit in the engine of a car, where all the machinery is. And so, he gives them the, he says, okay, get out, like, you get a choice, and he says, okay. The pilot gets out, and we're shot. Well, like, we're, like, I'm still kind of, like, wait.
Even the militia guys are shocked. Of course, then they start being men.
Well, they start catcalling her, I kind of saw it coming, but I was like, really? Again, it was written in 1986, so not a shocker. But then again, also, I loved that Gray is like, enough. Like, he shoots a gun into the air to get them to stop and says, we're not going to do anything to you. There's a blanket in my vehicle. Go get it. He takes it and wraps it around her, showing her respect that, okay, yeah, you are absolutely scantily clad, and these men are being absolutely ridiculous. So yeah, chapter 14, they get this pilot, they get her out. He's like, okay, we're gonna take her, and we need to take her where, like, take her to the palace. So you guys all need to take me and take her to the palace so that I can kind of, he literally is saying, I want to say this is what happened, because as of right now, the militia, the soldiers, actually think he is in charge. And he's like, yeah, no. No. He doesn't want them to find out that he was actually leaving them to Hendrik.
Yeah. It's a fine-edged sword. Like, take me to your higher...
Take me to your leader.
Yeah, I was avoiding that one. But that's exactly what it is. Let me go talk to your superiors and try and explain what the hell just happened. And, oh yeah, by the way, here's a prisoner.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of the way, like, and he's also thinking that if he can get in the palace, he can find Mara. Which also leads he can talk to her dad and see if he can work something out to not, well, be arrested as an off-worlder.
Well, yeah.
For being a part of the group that was going to willingly hand this planet over to this Hendrik guy?
Like, right.
There's some bad blood between him and everybody.
Yeah.
So it's...
The fact that it went from within minutes, hours, an hour, that he's probably, well, he's being hunted by Singh's men. And the locals aren't going to like him because he was part of the Carlisle Commandos, to he literally becomes the savior of the city. Because the soldiers are like, he beat these mechs one-handed and da-da-da-da.
Oh, the exaggeration from the stories. I can just imagine what's going around.
Which, it turns out not to be bad for him. But it also... He ends up, they get to the castle, and he gets treated like royalty for the next, 48 hours or 4 days or something?
He's a hero. He gets crimped and, you know, sucked up too, and...
Clothes, he gets a uniform, which I thought was kind of interesting, like, they stuck him in a royal guard uniform. Okay, well, yeah, we'll leave it at that for now, but I was like, that, I just...
Well, and at that point, we get our first real look at Mara.
Right, which we're going to leave Mara till after the commercial break. only because it's like, so she shows up at his room. He hasn't even seen her yet. And she's like, oh, I love you. She literally says to him, oh, my love. And he's like, he didn't say this, but he's thinking, like, the whole time we were canoodling, that we were being friends and playing house or whatever you want to call it. She never said that.
No.
But she does say to him, oh, I knew you weren't going to leave, which I'm still trying to figure out. He's like, oh, okay, well, he gets lost in her arms. Which, you know what? After a battle like that, and the fact that you've lost your dad, everybody in your squad is gone.
Yeah, your feelings are a little shaken and mixed.
Right?
Like, you gotta have something that is sort of normal, which... having some quiet nookie time
with a beautiful woman who's wearing very, I think he says her dress leaves little to the imagination.
Which, honestly, if they've already been canoodling, there is no imagination needed because he's seen it all.
Well, you never know.
But this is true. Yeah, she's a royal princess. Stereotypical royal princess.
I like her.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, no stuck so far up in the air that she doesn't... And he's a commoner. Mm-hmm. Even though he was
a mech warrior training.
Yeah, he's still a commoner and an off-roller. So... She's too sugary sweet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think he realizes it too, because he really thinks about all the time they spent together, plus the last time we saw each other, like she said, you know, oh, I knew you weren't leaving. So I'm like, okay, what ulterior motive does she or somebody in the palace that she's involved? There's something else going on.
Yeah. Yeah. So they have their little bit of fun in the afternoon and they go to the celebration because, of course, the city was liberated and you have to have a party and all of this stuff. And he gets an award called the Order of the Crimson Star, and he's called the Defender of Sargad, which is really, I think it's kind of cool for him. And he's told by the king directly, hey, my generals are impressed with you. They want to have a talk with you. And he's like, okay. But this is, and then we get a little bit more of a look at Mara in the next chapter, in chapter 15, which is our second last chapter. And she's in his arms and they're dancing and all of these other things at the party. And he's like, what she said earlier about, oh, I told you you weren't leaving. After his father was just killed, he's starting to, now that he's not in the heat of things, he's like, oh gosh,
you know,
I don't
like you.
I don't know. I'm not, like, he literally says that he has this emptiness where he used to feel for her. And I'm like, okay, all right, okay, let's I was kind of, at first I thought, okay, it's kind of cool, they can get back together. And then as I see more about her, I'm not particularly fond of her, but we don't really know much about her. And then she's gone. Like, we don't really hear much more about her after this, because then he starts talking to the generals and they want him to actually train and organize a mech lance, which he's kind of puzzled because it's like, I have two light mechs. I have a wasp and a locust. Like, they can't do much. But he's like, okay, well, at first he's like, I can't do this. Like, what, you can't talk to me. But then it's like, well, I kind of have to, right? It's, I don't really have another choice. And, but there's all of these dilemmas about the mechs and what they're going to be having to deal with, because they have a wasp that the head, the cockpit's all destroyed. They have this locust, which seems to be in pretty good condition. But they have the Hendrix, or the Pirates, or Singh's group, have a Marauder, a Stinger, a Shadowhawk if they can get it fixed, and then the Wasp,
the other
which
wasp.
Needs the leg repaired, but yeah. Really...
It's not a destroyed mech, so it's... Yeah, he's weighing his options. He can turn them down, and...
He'd still be the Defender of Sargad.
But he'd have taste in their mouth.
Yeah.
And he could even go back to being wanted by the militia and Sing.
Well, and as of right now, we have no idea if he'd ever be able to get off a planet anytime soon. And so this chapter, which is before we get to introduce to the Locust pilot, really, which I'm quite intrigued with her. But it leaves Gray thinking about, okay, well, yeah, I can do this. And the king is smiling. So you know that, like, he has all these questions, but it's like, well, he still has this vengeance stuck in his head. He's like, I don't know how I'm going to do this, but we can maybe make it work.
Yeah. It just kind of rethink about the avenue of how he's going to get his revenge. Because originally, he was just going to run in there gung-ho and just deal with it, which would have got him killed.
yeah.
like, flat out just would have got him killed. So now he's thinking about it, I think, with a bit more level-headed.
Yeah, and like, now that he actually has, well, he's being asked to repair and
train
other mech warriors, or at least people to work with mech warriors, and to they want him to train to be, like, train these anti-mech troops, which I'm really wondering, because I know in Chapter 15, I can't remember about in Chapter 16, but I know in Chapter 15, we can see that the Palace Guards, the commander for the Palace Guards, and the commander for the militia are not exactly, like,
they don't know, and that is, yeah, they talk about it in 16 about how they're not really on the same page, even though their goals are similar.
Well, it's like
they want to take different, they have different views on how they should get to the end goal.
Well, and it's, we're the more important ones because we're protecting the people. Well, no, we're the more important ones because we're protecting the, like, that's the kind of vibe I get from them. Or, like, you know, like, two gangs. Gangs in a community, right? Like, it's like,
like, I'm important because I'm protecting the president, but I'm also important because I'm protecting all of the people and the merchants. It's turf wars. Totally turf wars.
It totally is. And but like Chapter 16 is where we really kind of get to see a little bit more about Gray and what he's gonna have to face to get this all prepped.
Yeah, he's got some work cut out for him because now he has to figure out how to essentially get these two gangs to work together to reach the goal. And give him an office. They give him some headquarters so that he can, you know, have official meetings and talk to people. And but it's funny because it's in the mechanics district is where he's not actually at
the palace.
The palace, which is kind of good because I think in his mind, and it's talked about later in the chapter, he still needs to get a hold of Tor. So I think being down in that district, in a warehouse in the district, it's closer for him to find Tor. Because Tor knows machines. So it wouldn't be that far-fetched to, if he agrees to it, to help him fix mechs.
Yeah.
To be the mechanic for one or both of the mechs. And he's probably a lot more knowledgeable in the mechanics of the mechs than Gray is. Because Gray was taught how to pilot them, not how to fix them.
Well, that's the thing is, as a mech warrior, there might be some mech warriors out there who would be multifaceted, but it's like a helicopter pilot and a helicopter mechanic. You're two totally, like, you have the same base understanding of what the machine is and the parts and so on and so forth, but you're not going to have the experience.
Yeah, it's like, I know the clicking under my hood is not a good sign, but I don't know anything about how to make it stop. So that's when you get the other guy.
Yeah, like this part of the book ends with Gray realizing, okay, we have these mechs that both need some kind of repairs. We have, I have Tor, which I know has some kind of knowledge, but we also have this other person who definitely has experience in running a mech, because you can't just, it's like learning how to fly a fighter jet. You can't just pick that up overnight.
No.
Like, training foot soldiers, I'm not saying you can become a foot soldier or an infantryman like a snap of your finger, but it's not the same kind of intricacies. And so he decides to talk to the one of the commanders, and says, hey, like,
well, there's the militia sergeant is Ramage, and the guard is Lieutenant Nolum.
Oh, okay. So I got those names totally wrong, but that's okay. But he goes to him and he's like, okay, so I have an idea, but I need to throw it at you guys, because he couldn't, there's no way he could have just walked down into the cells and offered this to this mech pilot.
Right. Yeah, like, he needed to run the idea past somebody.
Yeah, and it seems like he's Like, he has the ears of the people he needs to, because they say, go ahead. But he looks her up, right? He doesn't go down there unprepared. And this is where hearing some of her backstory really shows what Hendrik and this Singh guy, like, what they're, those types of people can do. Because they didn't just, like, say, okay, at 10, you're gonna go to military school and do this. No.
Oh, they, well, they killed her family. She was an orphan.
And the neighbors saved her, right? Like, the neighbors saved her, and they all got captured and are...
And it was basically, you learn how to be a mercenary mech pilot, or you die. I think was the ultimate. Like, they might have sugarcoated it a little bit, as much as, you know, Overlord bad guys sugarcoat things.
But yeah, I don't know, but I think they were just like, hey, you know what? We have you. We are, we have you in our grips, and we can do pretty much whatever we want. So you could either stay in the dungeons, I don't know, go to a brothel, or, like, there's probably some other very much not nice things. And at least this way, one, she's getting trained. She got the chance to be trained to do something important, or possibly important, as well as she would have been getting fed, would have been, like, taken care of medically and all of these things, because these are really big, expensive machines. Like, don't get me wrong, she's not driving the Marauder, but it's still a Locust, which is not cheap, I can guarantee you.
No.
And she has to know what she's doing, and if she's not taken care of health-wise, she's not going to be able to run it.
No, absolutely. And the downside is they also look at them as expendable.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, all of these mercenary pilots that Singh has under his command, he knows full well they're expendable. So he's like, if they get captured and killed, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, as long as I don't lose the mech.
Oops. He does get real mad because lose two of the mechs. Not the big ones, but still.
But still, two. And with some lucky shots, those two can take out larger mechs.
Well, they could, especially if they're trained. And with Gray and
Lori,
yeah. Like, it's this woman, Lori, who, like, I hadn't even gotten to that yet. And Lee asked me, he's like, have you run into blah, blah, blah yet? And I'm like, what? And then when we ran into her and I told him, I'm like, oh, my God. Yeah. So I'm kind of hoping she becomes a pretty intricate part of this whole ordeal. But yeah, he goes down and he says to her, like, hey, these are your options.
Yeah. I know about you. I know of your circumstances. You can either sit in this jail cell until they figure out what to do with you, or you can come help me. And essentially, he dangles revenge under her nose.
Well, and you're not coming up and you're not going to have free reign, but you can earn it.
Absolutely. And I think that's honestly, when she decided initially to be trained as a mercenary mech pilot, that was also her probably end thought. Like, I can do this for X amount of years, probably make a little bit of money depending on, you know, what happens, and maybe buy her way out to go somewhere that's safer.
Or even stay there, but be like a hero, or because you're a mech warrior, you're not just a foot soldier, right?
Yeah.
You have more skills and you're more important, and you can't just, well, for the mercenaries, you can just be replaced. But in this chance, it's giving her a chance to not just get that revenge on Hendrik and his men, but it's also to kind of make up for her part in what's happened in the city, and maybe make something, like you said, of herself. And I think that's what kind of sold it for her.
Yeah, because she's not cold-hearted. She has a conscience. She doesn't like what's going on, but she knew if she fought back or spoke up against the plan, she would die.
Oh yeah, you don't. It's like you're part of a gang. You're part of a you're part of the Nazis. You don't like what the Nazis are doing. You're still gonna do it because you know they're gonna kill you.
Yeah,
right. So it's I'm liking where this is going. There's still lots of questions. I think we still need to talk a little bit more about these characters. So let's hear. This, I think there's an ad. a special ad because we're not quite at that 250 yet. So let's hear from one of the boys. And yeah, we'll be back in a minute.
Heidi ho, fellow gamers. Once again, we have a wonderfully painted lance to give away to one of our lucky subscribers. Painted in the Draconis Combine Ryuken Roku scheme, it includes a Battlemaster, a Catapult, a Dragon, and a Shadowhawk. A very special thanks to Army Painter Studios. This community member painted a lance for us to give away as a random prize to our subscribers. Any new or current subscriber to the channel can enter the draw. All you have to do is like our video and comment below, and we will do the draw when we hit 250 subscribers. Each video you like and comment on will get you an entry into this draw. Tell your friends, share with your enemies, and help us reach our 250 subscriber goal. Thank you all very much, and we look forward to that next major milestone that we get to share with you. Have a great day.
That sounds like an awesome prize. When we get to that 250 subscribers, I can't wait to see who wins. Thanks for the ad, Lee. Now, Laura's not here, but that's because we had so much fun discussing the chapters and wanted to talk about the characters. We'd create another podcast for that. So stay tuned, watch out for the next video. Make sure to like, subscribe, and comment. Always hit that bell. Thanks for watching, guys, and we'll talk to you soon.